On today's show, we look at the Doug Peterson firing and all other head coaching openings. We talk about the wild card weekend, slate of games, as well as my predictions for the divisional round. And then we talk about what's going on in Houston. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Deep Post Podcast. This is coming right after the Browns-Steelers game, and wow, what a game that was. We'll get to that, though. There were a lot of great games this weekend, a lot of ones that were really interesting to talk about, and I can't wait to dive into them. So let's just start right at the first game this weekend, Colts-Bills. This was just a phenomenal game to watch, back and forth all the way down. We had that bad call at the end with Zach Pascal, the fumble, and then was it a fumble? Was it not? I think it was pretty clearly a fumble, and it really didn't cost the Bills that bad call, which is good. But moving on to that Colts defense is phenomenal. I don't think I can stress that enough. DeForest Buckner in the middle of that defense, they're an absolute buzzsaw of a unit. I would hate to play them. I think any team would. And if they get a legitimate offense on the other side of them, you might see the Colts make a deep run next year. And talking about that offense, I didn't think they played awful. I don't think the Bills' defense is phenomenal by any means, but they managed to move the ball somewhat well against them. And we got to talk about the elephant in the room there, which is Phillip Rivers, of course. Now, I am a biased Chargers fan. Phillip Rivers could shoot me, and I'd still say he was in the right. So, maybe I'm a bit biased here, but I didn't think he played that bad. A lot of people are hopping on the Phillip Rivers hate bandwagon, talking about how he needs to retire and all this. He's washed. I thought he played pretty well. His receivers had a lot of drops. There was that touchdown on fourth down, which should have been touchdown, where he hit Michael Pittman in the back of the end zone. And Pittman just couldn't haul it in. I know the pass was a bit long, but considering Phillip Rivers was falling away when he made the throw, I don't think it was that bad of a throw. Talking about that fourth down, a lot of people are very, very upset with Frank Reich and the fourth down decisions that he made going for it on fourth down when you're 2 yards away from the end zone and you have a chip shot field goal. I'm not that mad about it. I know what it seems like. It seems like Frank Reich is just being aggressive for the sake of being aggressive. But what Frank Reich knows and what a lot of coaches who play the Bills know is that that offense is explosive. It truly is. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs are hard to contain for an extended period of time, especially when they've got great play calls coming in from Brian Daboll. So I think you got to be aggressive against them. It's the same thing you got to do against the Chiefs or the Packers. You got to play aggressive, because when you settle for three, there's a lot of times you end up losing. And we'll talk about some games later where coaches weren't aggressive. And I gotta say, that just seems much worse. It's a lot more cowardly, in my opinion. And it just is not a good look for them. And moving back to Phillip Rivers, this might have been his last game ever. And that's upsetting to me, because like I said before, I'm a Chargers fan. Phillip Rivers has been our quarterback since, as long as I can remember, what was it, 16 years he was our quarterback? He's a phenomenal player. And watching him go out in the playoffs like this is really heartbreaking. I would have loved to see him win a ring before he retires. He's been a phenomenal quarterback in this league for as long as I can remember. He got disrespected because he played on some bad Chargers teams with no offensive line for a while. So I was just happy to see him playing on a team where he was upright for more than half the game. I feel like that was a good change of pace for him. And this Colts team, I'll talk about them later in a later episode when I talk about every team's, what I think they should do in this offseason. But I think they're set up pretty well right now. That offensive line, we all know it's legit. Quentin Nelson is a beast up front. And that defense, like I said, they played phenomenal against this Bills team. A very good Bills offense. Darius Leonard, DeForest Buckner. They've got great players on that side of the ball. And Matt Eberflus, if he doesn't leave to become a coach somewhere else, he's a fantastic defensive coordinator. So now let's switch sides and talk about the Bills. The Bills, I know they were playing the 7th seed, but this Colts team, to me, is a lot better than a 7th seed. There's a reason they went 11-5. They played well against a phenomenal defense. They looked pretty good, in my opinion. Josh Allen, we all know it this season, he's been playing out of his mind. And he's improved so much from when he was coming out of Wyoming. He doesn't even look like the same quarterback to me. To me, this is what I thought Josh Allen, if he hit his absolute ceiling, this is what I thought he would look like in the NFL. But it looks like he's got even more room to grow. Now, I will say, he needs to avoid getting hit as much as he does. There's way too many times when I've seen him just run and not slide. That's a major part of his game. The running aspect, he used it extensively against this Colts defense. And it worked well, but he would just run upright right into Darius Leonard or sometimes a defensive lineman. You can't be doing that as a quarterback. Not if you want to stay healthy. And so I hope and pray that moving forward, he's going to slide a little bit because I would love to see Josh Allen on the field. When they have him on the field and Stephon Diggs out there, this team is truly, truly, truly explosive. And moving from talking about explosive to a very not explosive game, the Rams-Seahawks. Wow. I know I just talked about how great the Colts defense is, but this Rams defense looked even better. Aaron Donald, I don't know what I can say about him that hasn't been said a million times. He's phenomenal. Probably the greatest defensive player of at least our generation. And even when he went out with injury, this defense stood up well against what we all thought was a good Seahawks offense. And man, that Donald injury hurts. You hope he's ready to go next game. But these injuries are starting to pile up for this Rams team. With Kupp going down. And then, of course, Goff's thumb. And John Wolfram's... Wolfram, is that his last name? I know he's got a wolf somewhere in there. But their backup quarterback, whatever you want to call him, he went to the hospital and... we hope he's okay, of course. I don't expect to see him play next week. I expect to see Goff play. But it worries me how many injuries are piling up for the Rams. It's getting a little rough. I think they're a good team. They're obviously well coached by Sean McVay. But these injuries could stop them. They could really slow them down in the playoffs. But what wasn't slowed down was Cam Akers, their running back. He looked phenomenal on Saturday. He carved up that defense. He filled the role that the Rams needed him to fill, which was that Todd Gurley workhorse back. I know he's not peak Todd Gurley, but no running back in my lifetime is peak Todd Gurley. Peak Todd Gurley was phenomenal, but that's a different story. Cam Akers played great. And then the Rams have a good changeup back behind him with Malcolm Brown. He's great at coming in alongside Daryl Henderson. Those two are phenomenal at backing up Cam Akers, and those three running backs are good enough where I'm no longer worried about the Rams' run game. Last year, I had no clue what they were doing on the ground, and I think that's really the reason they didn't end up making the playoffs last year, because they could not run the ball, and that's such a big part of what Sean McVay does. When you watch them play offense, the run is what sets up everything. McVay is a master of making all his runs look very similar to his passing formations, and we all know what McVay can do out of play action with Goff throwing the ball down the field to Robert Woods and hopefully a healthy Cooper Kupp. But moving from that good offense to a very bad offense, man, you guys remember first couple weeks of the season, the Seahawks team? We thought it was legit, or at least I did. I thought Russell Wilson, MVP easily. I didn't see any way that the Seahawks were not getting to the conference finals at the very minimum. But now, they obviously did not make it there, and that offense in the back half of the season did not look good. There's no way around it. They did not look good. Now, part of that, in this game at least, is this Rams defense is, like I said, phenomenal. It's hard to look good against this Rams defense. Jalen Ramsey completely shut down DK Metcalf. Tyler Lockett got swallowed up by the secondary. And Chris Carson could not get anything going on the ground. But still, you'd like to see more from this offense. And to me, it just feels like they don't know what their identity is. For so long, Seattle has been run the ball first, play good defense. That's what they've been. But now, all of a sudden, it's, are we throwing the ball? Because when we had Russ cooking in the first half of the season, they looked unstoppable. But now it's, do we throw the ball? Do we pass the ball? Well, we can't really do either effectively, so what do we do? And Russell Wilson, man, I don't even know what happened to him. He's not the same quarterback he was at the start of the year. That's for sure. At the start of the year, Russell Wilson was on a different plane of existence from, it felt like, every other quarterback. And now he just seems pedestrian, almost. To me, it comes a lot to, like, offensive design. I think their offensive coordinator, he's got to go. This does not look like a good, well-coached offense to me. They're not doing anything. They're not adjusting. They just look lost out there. They look like they had no rhythm. And I think that offensive coordinator position for them, it needs to change. I think you got to pick a direction and say, hey, we're a passing offense. Or, hey, we're a running offense. Whatever it is, you need to come up with an identity and then stick to it. You can't do this switch in the middle of the season anymore. You got to pick an identity and stick with it. And to me, your identity needs to be with Russell Wilson. You've got the weapons for us. You've got DK Metcalf. You got Tyler Lockett. You've got some solid tight ends there. Chris Carson's good out of the backfield, but Chris Carson running the ball is not as good as Russell Wilson throwing the ball. I don't think that's something I need to clear up. I think that's a fairly obvious point for everyone. But I think you gotta stick with Russ in the passing game. I know he didn't look good today. He looked awful, frankly. But I think, to me, that's more a function of a lack of identity and this phenomenal Rams defense. So, to me, you got to stick with Russell Wilson. And you got to build around that. And I'll get more into what I think the Seahawks need to do to fix this team in the offseason. Hopefully, I'll be coming out with more videos in the offseason. talking about this, but we'll see. And now we get to the surprise of the weekend. Well, the first surprise of the weekend. This was a very... There were a couple games this weekend that I was like, this is not what I was expecting. And I don't think anyone expected what we saw in the Washington football team playing the Bucs. Taylor Heinicke. Oh my lord. Taylor Heinicke. I was expecting a lot of things. I was not expecting what we saw from Taylor Heinicke. When I heard Taylor Heinicke was starting, I was like, isn't that the guy who couldn't beat out Jordan Ta'amu in the AAF? Or XFL? It was the XFL. And he's starting for this team? I was not expecting good things. And coming into the game, I thought the Washington football team would be kind of close to the Bucks. Because the Bucks have a nasty habit right now of letting teams into games. They'll stall out on offense for a while. And the Washington football team took advantage of it. They played great football. To me, what you saw out there was two big things. One, fantastic quarterback play from Taylor Heinicke. He did absolutely everything you can do as like a backup quarterback coming in. He made great throws, great reads. He made smart plays. There was one where one of the Bucs defensive linemen hit it back to him and he just knocked it down. That's a smart quarterback play. We saw Ryan Tannehill in the Titans game have the same thing happen to him, but he caught it. And that ended up losing the Titans like 10 yards on that drive. That's a drive killer right there. Taylor Heinicke was smart enough to knock down the pass, keep the drive moving. Just smart plays from him. And then, of course, the pocket mobility. Oh, the way he moved in and out of sacks, getting out of it, was truly phenomenal. His touchdown run, when he got out of, it seems like, the entire Bucs defense and dove for that pylon, that was one of the most fantastic things I've seen in a long time. The other big thing I think we saw from the Washington football team, and this is something I didn't think I'd say about the Washington football team probably ever, is that they looked so well coached. Ron Rivera, I loved it when they hired him because he's a great coach. Shout out to him for beating cancer, by the way. You know, good job there. This team, though, is just so well coached. You see it, they don't make a ton of mistakes on offense or defense. They're disciplined. We didn't see a lot of penalties. They played great football. That defense, by the way, it feels like every game on Saturday, we saw some great defensive play. This whole weekend, we saw a lot of very good defensive play. And that Washington football team defense is very good. Dayron Payne, a phenomenal player. People don't give him the recognition he deserves. He had 2 sacks this game. He's a monster in the interior of that defense. He also had that insane fumble that he caused on one of the Bucs running backs, the rookie one. What's his name? Keyshawn Vaughn? Yeah. I knew his name like rhymed or something. I was close. Keyshawn Vaughn. He created a fumble there. You expect your cornerback to make that play when the offensive player is falling to the ground and they just knock the ball out. That's something you want from a high-level cornerback like Marlon Humphreys or something. You don't normally expect that from your big nose tackle. But he went out there and he did that. And he played phenomenal. That defensive line is fantastic. But they kind of got shut down. I'm not going to lie. Aside from Dayron Payne, they kind of got shut down tonight. Or Saturday. Whenever it was. And part of that comes down to Tampa Bay's offensive line. Those two tackles for them, Donovan Smith and Tristan Wirfs, are really good. They shut down Chase Young and Ryan Kerrigan. And that's not an easy task to do. But I think their game plan of shutting those two down was great. They did everything you need between those two tackles. And then they chipped them a lot with their running backs and with Gronk and Cameron Brait. And they did a great job of just not letting them get pressure on Brady. And that's the big thing. When you have Tom Brady, you can't let pressure get to him. I know he does great under pressure, but you want to keep him upright, obviously. And those two tackles did a great job of slowing down those edge rushers just enough that Tom Brady can get the ball out quickly. Brady's speed of getting the ball out really helps any team neutralize as edge rushers. We saw it today, or Saturday, whenever the game was. If I say today, just assume I'm talking about whenever the game was. And he just neutralizes edge rushers. It's phenomenal what Brady can do. I mean, I feel like I don't really need to say too much about how great Tom Brady is. We all know it. We've all dealt with Tom Brady dominating the league for feels like 30 years now. So I don't need to speak too much on that. And that Tampa Bay offense, man, they just, to me, have too many weapons to deal with sometimes. I know Chris Godwin played bad. We all know it. But when he's actually catching the ball, which normally he does at a high level, that offense is tough to stop. Very tough to stop. But sometimes it feels like they stop themselves. I'm not going to lie. They go through dry spells. They seem to lose rhythm. And it feels like almost randomly at points. And that's what scares me with the Bucks moving forward. Especially when they're going to go play a very good Saints defense next week. Especially against that Saints defense that has shut them down pretty much twice already this season. I'm not sold. I'm not sold on Tampa Bay. And it feels weird saying that, because I look at everything I've said, that offense on paper, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, Cameron Brait, Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones when he's healthy, Tom Brady orchestrating all of that, throwing a good offensive coordinator in Byron Leftwich, and a good offensive coach in Bruce Arians, and a solid offensive line. You look at all that on paper, and it's hard for me to say, oh yeah, they're just going to get shut down. Because you look at everything, and it feels like they should be the top offense in the league. But this season, we've seen they haven't been. The timing's been off. People like Godwin have had off games. Now, Godwin, he normally doesn't have off games. This was a weird thing that happened to him. I don't know if it was nerves in the playoffs or what. But this offense, it's just something in the back of my mind that says they're not ready yet. They're not quite ready yet. They need to work on that chemistry, getting the ball out. And something about their defense just doesn't quite sit right with me yet. I think it's their secondary. I'm not sold on that yet. That front defensive line, phenomenal. You got JPP, Vita Vea, Ndamukong Suh, and then Shaq Barrett coming off the one side. That's a good front four. And you throw in two phenomenal linebackers in Devin White behind him. And then Levante David. Is that Levante David? I need to double check that. Yeah, Levante David. Wow. I was going to talk about how underrated Levante David is, and I think that sums it up well enough that I can forget his name when he's one of the best linebackers in the league. Levante David's criminally underrated. and I'm really not helping that at this point. But that front seven or so, they're great, but their secondary, it's something that doesn't sit right with me. Where it feels like if Taylor Heinicke can carve you up as great as that game was, maybe you're not going to do great when it's Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball. Or really anyone left in this NFC. When they're throwing the ball, it might get rough. If it's Mahomes in the Super Bowl, I just don't see them being able to shut anyone down. And that's despite them having a very good defensive coordinator. I love Todd Bowles. He's one of my favorite coaches in the league. Great coordinator. I hope he gets a job somewhere being a head coach again, because I think he did a very good job with the Jets when he was there. It was just that he was on, you know, the Jets, which not exactly a recipe for success for a coach. So, yeah, I think the Bucs are talented, but something just doesn't sit right with me. Moving on to Sunday slate, though, we had, to me, one very, very good game to watch. One fairly good game to watch, and one game that made me want to shove my head through a wall. Let's start with the fairly good game to watch in Ravens-Titans. This was, to me, a rivalry game. We saw it out there. Those two teams do not like each other. But coming into the game, I wasn't willing to say it was a rivalry game. Because when one team has dominated so far, I can't really call that a rivalry. But the Ravens, with that win, to me, they showed that this is a rivalry that we might see for a couple years moving forward. Which is exciting. I feel like the NFL, we don't get a lot of those. So we gotta appreciate the ones we do get. And I think we've got a good one here. That Titans defense, they played well enough, in my opinion. They played well enough in most aspects of the game. They shut down that run very well. J.K. Dobbins could not get really anything going. And the other thing they did that they haven't been able to do all season is they got pressure on the quarterback. I was not expecting that. Especially when the Ravens' offensive line isn't bad. They're not as good as they used to be. I mean, it's hard to be as good as you used to be when you have Marshall Yanda retire. Just a generational talent there. And then also, your left tackle gets done for the year, so you have to slide your right tackle over. And Orlando Brown played pretty well today. Love Orlando Brown Jr. He's fantastic. But the Titans got pressure on Lamar. And that's something that I wasn't ready for. They haven't shown it all year that they're able to do it. But they got pressure on Lamar. And more than that, they shut down the passing game pretty well. We'll talk more about the Ravens passing game in a second. But there was one thing they couldn't shut down, and that's what killed them, which was Lamar running the football. They had no answer for it. They let him just cut huge holes through that defense. And that, to me, is what killed them. Those explosive plays where Lamar was running the football is the difference between the Titans moving on and the Titans getting eliminated like they did. And that's really because the Titans shut down everything that wasn't Lamar's run. That Ravens offense could not get anything going until Lamar started running the football. And when he did, you could see the gears start to turn on that offense, and they started to move a little bit better. But to me, the big thing that's still missing from the Ravens, and it's been missing forever, it feels like, is the passing game. Lamar did not pass the ball well yesterday. Oh, this time it actually is yesterday. Ooh, because I'm recording this on Monday. So, Lamar cannot pass the ball, or at least he couldn't in that game. I know he's shown it on the past that he's able to light up the defense when he gets in rhythm and he's comfortable. He can pass the ball well. He did not get in a rhythm on Sunday. And I don't think he's going to get in too much of a rhythm for the rest of the playoffs, because he's going to get a lot of pressure on him, especially when they're playing a very solid Bills team next week. And his interception, there's no way around it. It was bad. For those of you who didn't see it, he was throwing effectively just a little, was it like 20-yard out route, pretty much. A corner route, that's the word for it, not an out route, sorry. I know everyone who actually knows football just cringed when I said 20-yard out route, as that is not a route, that's a corner route. And so it was a corner route, and he just threw it so far behind his receiver. Painfully behind. On a corner route, you have to throw where they're going. You want to throw it as close to the sideline as you can. Because if they run the route right, that's going to be the place where the receiver can get the ball and the defender has no chance of getting it. When you throw it behind them, that's where the defender is. There's no way around it. That's just a bad throw. And I don't know how to get around that. It's just, it was not good. He had a lot of throws where it felt like he held onto the ball forever. He had a sack that he took where he just held on the ball for like 6 seconds and sat inside the pocket. To me, that's inexcusable. If you're going to hold on to the ball for 6 seconds, you can't do it. I'm trying to think of a situation where that would work. You can't sit inside the pocket for 6 seconds. It doesn't matter how good your offensive line is. That's not going to work. And especially when you're Lamar Jackson and you have such good running ability, to me, you got to get outside the pocket. Even if you don't run, getting outside the pocket will shift the defense a little bit and you might find something open. It was just bad play. And that's what I've seen from Lamar for a while now, is sometimes he'll go through stretches where he struggles to make the right decision. Throwing the ball. And maybe that's part of the offense, where they're not making the right play calls up there, and Lamar doesn't know what to do. But he's just had a couple games now where he's shown on tape that he is struggling a lot. But when he's running the ball, he's electric. I think that's the big caveat that bails him out. He is electric running the football. There's no way around it. And it bails him and that team out a lot. And the other thing that bails them out is their defense. Their defense played phenomenal this game. I know they gave up some passing yards to Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill had a solid game, aside from that truly awful interception. On the other side, I can't talk about how bad Lamar's interception was and then not talk about how bad Tannehill's game-sealing interception was. He predetermined where he was going to go with the football, missed a wide-open A.J. Brown for a touchdown, and threw into coverage. That's so many things that you don't want to do, and he did all of them at once. Just a bad play from Tannehill. But aside from that, Tannehill had a fairly solid day out there. And that was because the Ravens really gave him the passing lanes, because they were focused on shutting down Derrick Henry. And they did that incredibly well. Their run defense, phenomenal. Anytime you can shut Derrick Henry down for less than 100 yards, I would consider that a win. And for shutting him down for almost 50 yards, maybe even less than that. That's all you can ask for in a run defense. They did such a good job there. And I know they did. Moving forward, they got to shut down the pass. They're going to have to adjust next week because they can't give Josh Allen those passing lanes. If you give that to Josh Allen, you will not come out with a win. There's no way around that one. Josh Allen is simply a better quarterback, in my opinion, than Ryan Tannehill, at least this season. And he's going to be able to move down the field in big chunks if they give him those passing lanes. And, wow. Yeah, that game was, it was something. And moving to a game that was less than something, in my opinion, Bears-Saints. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I was sitting there watching this game, and I almost fell asleep a couple times. I don't normally fall asleep when I'm watching football. So normally I can find something that interests me, like defense or a player I like. I haven't fallen asleep when I watch Jets football. I've had more fun watching a Jets football game than watching the Bears play football. There's nothing in the world that I don't like as much as watching the Bears play football. I know that sounds harsh. Bears fans, sorry to say it, but I feel like some of you would agree that Bears offense is truly anemic. It's sleep-inducing. I would say if any of you struggle falling asleep, put on Bears tape, because when David Montgomery cannot run the football, that offense is bad. Bad, bad, bad. I feel like I have to throw in just a few extra bads because they're just not good. I know they dropped the touchdown, right? That's the big thing. Trubisky had a great throw down the field, but Wims dropped the pass. And that changes the entire outlook of the game. But to me, they were not aggressive enough in this game. That's the big thing. They weren't aggressive, in my opinion. They didn't really test the Saints down the field. And I know you've got Mitchell Trubisky as your quarterback. That limits what you can do on offense. But Trubisky did not look bad. I mean, he won the Nickelodeon Valuable Player Award, the MVP. So clearly he's doing something right. And I think him winning that award justifies picking him over Mahomes and Watson, you know? Sorry, Bears fans, to bring that up. I know you've heard that joke forever. But what can I say? It's a low-hanging fruit. Easy content. And I'm just starting a podcast, so I need the easy content. Thanks, guys. And honestly, I don't even know what else to talk about in this game. The Saints offense, they played well enough to win. They beat that Bears defense. And the Bears defense is doing good, holding the Saints to 21 points, and for most of the game only holding them to like 7 or 14 points. That's phenomenal. To me, though, they need big plays. That's what they need. They need sacks or something. And that's got to come from Khalil Mack. And to me, the big thing, I don't know what's wrong with Khalil Mack right now. And when I say wrong, it's not like he's playing poorly. He's doing his job well, but it's just, it's shifted so much that right now it feels like he's more of a run stopper than what he was a couple years ago, which was a quarterback killer. To me, I don't know if that comes from the defensive coordinator shift from Vic Fangio to Chuck Pagano, but man, it feels like so long ago that we saw Khalil Mack just wrecking teams and offenses, and he's just not doing that right now. And I think the Bears, their defense desperately needs that, because when he's wrecking offenses, that's when Eddie Jackson back there can start picking off bad passes from quarterbacks even easier. And Roquan Smith, when he's healthy, can really wreak havoc. And I think the Bears, they missed Roquan today. Or Sunday. Whenever the game was. It was, Man, Roquan, he really helps that team, but I don't think he helps them enough to win. The main reason for that is that Roquan Smith does not play on offense, and that's what the Bears need. Trubisky was okay. I don't know what else to say. He wasn't as bad as we've seen Mitchell Trubisky in the past, but it feels like he just needs a change of scenery or a different coach or something, because we know the talent's there. Man, ugh. Sometimes it feels like you gotta crawl through a mile of mud to get to that talent. And this was one of those games. He didn't play bad. He just didn't have the chance to play well, if you get what I'm saying there. I felt like the coaching did not give him the opportunity to play well. They didn't put him in positions where he could make plays to change the game. And to me, the big way you do that is throwing the ball downfield. This is just a side note, but why are all the deep balls going to Wims downfield? I know he's good, and I know Mooney's out. That's normally your deep ball threat, but could we run Allen Robinson deep, like, just a couple times? He's only far and away the best receiver you guys have on the team, and one of the best receivers in the league. Maybe we could send him deep just a little bit. Man, I hope Allen Robinson goes somewhere where they actually throw the ball and shows everyone who doubts him why he's so, so good. Just really anywhere with a quarterback would be nice. I'd love to see him play with someone who's not Blake Bortles or Mitch Trubisky or Nick Foles. I would just like that. That would make my soul happy right there. I don't even know what else to say about this game. Saints defense is good. We all know that already. Breeze, he looks like he has enough juice in him to be okay. Michael Thomas looked somewhat healthy, which is all the Saints really need right now. They're going playing the Bucs next week, and we'll preview that in a bit, but the big thing that worries me about Breeze right now is man coverage. That's what scares me. The Bears were kind of forced to playing zone because of their injuries, and Breeze, he still has the arm to beat zone coverage. He's going to check for the right play if you're playing zone, and he'll move the ball down the field, just like we saw in this game. He's good enough against zone that we don't got to worry about that. What scares me for the Saints is what happens when you have receivers playing against tight man coverage. Can Breeze still beat them? Can he still beat that coverage with his throws? And I'm not sure. I think he could do it maybe once a game. I don't know if he can do it consistently. But I guess the good thing about the Saints is with Michael Thomas out there, if he's healthy, your goal is, with the scheme and with Michael Thomas's abilities, to not make Breeze have to beat man coverage or tight man coverage. You're hoping with Michael Thomas, his famous slant route, and his other route running abilities, and those short throws that are open quick, even against man coverage, where Breeze does not have to beat a defender. That's the big thing. If he has to beat a defender, I'd start getting concerned. And now, after talking about that Bears-Saints game for way too long, honestly, no part of me wanted to talk about that game for that long, we get to what may be my favorite game this weekend. Browns-Steelers. And if you're a Steelers fan, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for you. Maybe you'll look into, like, therapy or something. take a nap, take some deep breaths. Honestly, if you're a Steelers fan, I don't even know how you've gotten to the point where you're still able to listen to this. Yeah. Steelers. Ugh. The Browns got off to such a hot start. That's where I got to start with this. That first quarter, really that first half from the Browns, is one of the craziest sequences of football I think I may ever see in my life. Going up 28-0 in the first quarter? It's ridiculous. That's all I can say. Genuinely ridiculous. And, man, it starts with that fumble into the end zone. And then you got great defensive play, making interceptions. They had four on the game, which is insane considering their two starting cornerbacks were out. So you got four interceptions on the game. And, man, when that Browns offense is humming, keep in mind they did this. I know they said it on the broadcast literally every drive, but they did this without a lot of their guards and a lot of their coaches. That offensive line for the Browns is fantastic. I know that's the obvious, one of the most obvious things in the world if you watch that game. That offensive line is very good, even when they have backups in. And man, when that offense is humming, it's a thing of beauty to watch. That's all I can say. You got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt running behind a very good offensive line. They're just cutting holes right through the defense. Then Baker Mayfield, he gets those play action looks. And play action shots are where Baker Mayfield can really thrive and throw the ball downfield to Jarvis Landry, making great plays out there. And whew, that offense is phenomenal. When they're humming, they stalled out a couple times in the third quarter, and that's really what made this game close, was that third quarter, really, when the Browns kind of, it felt like they took a seat back. They took back, they went, let's relax. We're killing the Steelers in Pittsburgh. And that's what led the Steelers back into this game. But they made enough plays to make it not matter in the end. They closed it out well. Mayfield, he just looks at home right now in that offense. That's all I can really say. After seeing him play in last year's offense, which was, frankly, just not good. Last year's offense with Freddie Kitchens. For the majority of the year, it was not a good offense to watch. But now, that offense, it just looks better. Mayfield looks more comfortable in it. I think part of that comes from the fact that the tackles on that team have been upgraded exponentially to Jack Conklin and Jedrick Wills. Forgot his name for a second there. I almost said Tristan Wirfs. Right draft class, right position, wrong player. But, man, he's just taking shots down the field. He's getting the ball out quickly. Everything's more in rhythm with Mayfield. It just looks good. Now we got to talk about Pittsburgh. Man, oh, man. That defense did not play well until the third quarter. The third quarter, they kind of started to come alive and played okay. But that first half, they just got shredded. They looked shell-shocked. They did not know what was happening. And to be honest with you, I don't think any of us knew what was happening in that first half. It was a whirlwind of things happening. TJ Watt played well. I'll say that. He got pressure against some very good offensive linemen. But man, that secondary, they really couldn't stop him. And they couldn't stop the run. And that's the biggest thing with the Browns, is you have to be able to stop the run. Make them a passing team. Don't let them get into their play-action mode. You got to make them just a straight-up passing team. And that's a hard thing to do. and the Steelers were unable to do that. I'm not faulting them for not being able to stop Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, but they just didn't make any adjustments. And they just didn't play well. That's all I can really say about them. They didn't look like they cared. And that goes for the entire Pittsburgh team. That first half, they did not look like they came to play. They didn't look like they cared. Ben Roethlisberger, I know he threw for almost like 500 yards or something. But the four turnovers, come on now. And I know we talked about Phillip Rivers maybe retiring earlier. Ben Roethlisberger, is it time for him to hang it up? Man, great career from him. And I mean, on one hand, you look at it and you go, well, he did just throw for 500 yards, so he clearly still has some level of play in him. But on the other side, you got to think a lot of that came in pretty much garbage time. And he threw the ball like 60-some times. And he had four interceptions. And frankly, this whole season to me, he hasn't looked like... He obviously has not looked like the Ben Roethlisberger of old. We can all be clear on that. His arm down the field is not what it used to be. Part of that's just, he's older now. We all know that. And without that deep ball, I think Pittsburgh, even if Ben does not retire, they got to find some way to move on to a new quarterback who has the ability to threaten the defense deep down the field consistently. Because they have the weapons to do it. They've got great wide receivers, even if Juju leaves in free agency this year. They've got great weapons. The offensive line, I'll be honest, it's not fantastic. It's not great. It's aging. They'll probably end up losing Alejandro Villanueva in free agency this year. So this is a team that I think they're going to get gutted by free agency, and that's really going to hurt them. They're really up against the cap. And, man, I don't even know what else to say. They were just bad. That's all you really can say about them. They got shell-shocked. But shout out to the Browns. Great game from them. So now I want to transition quickly to a quick look ahead for next week. I'm not really great at predictions, and you'll see that pretty quickly, because you'll look back on these in a week and say, wow, how did he manage to get every single one of those wrong? And I guess it just comes down to just a talent, you know, a natural gift. So I guess if you're a betting person, just bet the opposite of what I'm about to say. We start with Chiefs-Browns. And I'm trying to hold my bias back. Because like I said, I'm a Chargers fan. I hate the Chiefs with every single part of my heart. So I want the Browns to win. But do I think they're going? Do I think they are? Wow. That was an awful sentence. Oh, man. I'm not sure they're going to. But you know what? I'm going to pick them anyway. I don't know what else to say. It's just a gut feeling that, man, I don't know if the Chiefs can stop the Browns' run game. It's as simple as that to me. I mean, I think you could look on the other side and say, do you think the Browns are going to stop the Chiefs' passing game? And obviously, no. I don't think anyone can really stop the Chiefs' passing game. But I think when you have a fantastic run game like the Browns have, they're going to be able to, at the very least, I think they make it a lot closer than a lot of people think. I think they give the Chiefs a run for their money. I think Myles Garrett can wreak some havoc on that Chiefs offensive line. So you know what? I'm going to pick the Browns. I'm going to do it. I've talked myself into it. I'm going to take the Browns. I'm not going to say a score because that would be just me throwing out two numbers that are just wrong. And we all know they're wrong. So let's just say Browns. I think it'll be close. Maybe like a field goal game. But I think it'll definitely be a close game. That's going to be one of my favorites of the weekend. Now, on the other side of the AFC, we got Bills Ravens. To me, you got to go Bills. Plain and simple. I think Josh Allen is playing at a higher level than Lamar Jackson is right now. I think both defenses are relatively the same to me. Not like schematically or anything, but I think they're both playing at about the same level. The only thing is the Bills have shown that they struggle to stop the run sometimes. And that's something you can't do against the Ravens. I think I can see a world where the Ravens' run game gets going and they just dominate this game. To me, the more likely outcome is that Josh Allen gets hot, that Bills' offense gets hot, and when they get hot, they're hard to stop. And I don't think I see the Ravens stopping that offense. I know I raved about their defense earlier, but I think you're going to see Marcus Peters make some mistakes like he normally does. He gambles. And you can see him get burnt easily. So I'm going with the Bills. I'll say by a touchdown. Now we got the NFC. NFC is interesting, man. Packers, Rams. Whew. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for half of that game. Watching the Rams offense against the Packers defense, that's not as exciting as watching the Packers offense against the Rams defense. Oh, that's going to be a good thing to watch. Davante Adams, Jalen Ramsey, hopefully Aaron Donald playing too. Oof. I'm excited for that game. But what do I think is going to happen? Man, it's hard to pick against the Packers. You got Rodgers, probably the MVP of the league. You got Davante Adams, who I know he's playing against a tough matchup. You got Aaron Jackson, or Aaron Jones back there. I think I got to go. I got to go Packers at this point. The Rams, the way they win that game is through running the football. Same way the Ravens beat the Bills, in my opinion. Packers defense against the run, Packers defense in general, has just been so hit or miss this year. If their run game gets going with Cam Akers again, and they start setting the tone, then I could see the Rams winning. But that's also going to come down to them shutting down that Packers offense. Which, while I think it's possible, I don't think it's probable. Again, be ready for all of these to be wrong. Because even as I'm saying that, I can absolutely see a world where Jalen Ramsey shuts down Davante Adams. And now that I've said that, Davante Adams is going to pop off this game. Watch that happen. Last game, Saints-Bucks. To me, this is the easiest one to pick. To me, it's the Saints. I know I've talked about how I don't love the Saints so far. Talked about how I don't think they're a great team. And how I think the Bucks, on paper, are a phenomenal team. But it's hard for me to overlook those two dominant games by the Saints. They've beaten this team twice. They beat them handily twice. And I don't know if the Bucks can change that in one more game. Maybe their pass game, if their aerial game gets going, if Chris Godwin can actually catch again, and they start moving the ball through the air down the field, that's their recipe for success. Because to me, you're not going to be able to run the ball against this Saints defense. DeMario Davis, I know I didn't talk about him in the Saints game wrap-up before, but he's a monster. Cam Jordan, we all know, is a monster. That Saints defense is very, very tough to run the ball against. And so I think you got to throw the ball against him, and that's where the Bucks' strength is, throwing the ball. But again, it's hard for me to overlook those two games where the Saints were just dominant. And so, despite what I think, which is on paper that the Bucs are a better team, I'm going to have to go with the Saints. Simply because of the history there. I know I sound like a broken record at this point of, oh, well, the Bucs are very good, and I could see them winning in these ways, but the Saints won twice. And I think it's just hard for me to get over those. You know? When you have those two dominant performances, it's hard for me to look past that and say, well, in this matchup, maybe it'll be different. We've already seen it happen twice. I think it happens a third time. Well, I think that just about does it for today's show. Thank you for sticking with me till the end. Can't wait to see y'all again next week when we look back at how many picks I got wrong, review the games, and look forward to the championship round. All right, so now let's transition to something I was not expecting to see today. And that's that Doug Peterson has been fired by the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, the Eagles are coming off an off year. There's no way around it. Their year this year has just not been good. Their offense has been awful. Their defense has been dreadful, especially their pass defense. So I'm not completely blown away when I thought Doug Peterson would be fired for just how bad the Eagles are. But we all know the real reason, the big reason. It's his alleged tanking against the Washington football team. That's the big reason he got fired. All right. For those of you who don't know, week 17, the Eagles are playing the Washington football team. If Washington loses, they're out of the playoffs, and the Giants go in instead. In that situation, in a, mind you, winnable game, the Eagles pulled out their starting quarterback, who, by the way, at the start of the year was not their starting quarterback. He was the backup to Carson Wentz, Jalen Hurts. They pull Hurts out. They put their third-string quarterback, Nate Sudfeld, in the fourth quarter, and they end up losing. So Giants fans are mad because their team didn't make the playoffs. Note to Giants fans, I don't know if you want to make the playoffs, try winning more than six games. That might help. I guess also a healthy Saquon Barkley would help a lot too. But moving forward, try not putting yourself in that position. And honestly, that move, I didn't have a huge problem with it. I can understand why players were mad at it. To me, I would have started Sudfeld straight out of the gate, personally. If you wanted to test how good Sudfeld was, then I think you give him the whole game to figure it out. You've already seen Jalen Hurts for a while. I mean, obviously, you want a bigger sample size with Hurts. But if you're going to test out Sudfeld, at least give him the entire second half. I got to think that's what you do in preseason, at least. Why would you just give him part of a quarter? That just didn't make sense to me. And so, Doug Peterson's lost his job. Again, I'm not really shocked. I think most people kind of saw this coming, at least a little bit, with how poorly the Eagles did this year. And, yeah. Now, Philadelphia becomes a very interesting spot when we look at the head coaching opens. Wow. I'm not good at the English language. I couldn't decide if I wanted to say openings or vacancies. So I just kind of said both. Wow, I'm really a professional over here. But if we look at these vacancies, right? We've got the Eagles, Lions, Chargers, Jets, Falcons, Jags, and Texans. So we've got what is that, seven spots? And I would say the Eagles, they fall into the middle or back of the pack of, if I'm a coaching candidate, where do I want to go? To me, that clear top few teams that I would want to go to, I definitely want to go to either the Jags or the Chargers. Well, I obviously want to go to the Chargers because I'm a Chargers fan. But those are the two big teams because they're both going to have young, promising quarterbacks. The Chargers obviously have Justin Herbert. They've got all that talent on the defense with Joey Bosa, Derwin James, and a bunch of guys who should probably be in a nursing home at this point with Chris Harris Jr., Casey Hayward. But we do have young talent over there, good offensive talent, Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler, Mike Williams. We've got good players over there. Got to rebuild the offensive line. But that's an appealing spot for a general manager or a head coach because you've got Justin Herbert. You've got your quarterback set. The Jags, obviously, number one overall pick. You should pick Trevor Lawrence. Or maybe if you're absolutely insane, you decide you want Justin Fields instead. That's an argument we're going to have. We're going to have that argument in the offseason. I don't think it's much of an argument, but we'll talk about that in the offseason. So the Jags get a very promising young quarterback at one. The Jets, I think, are another appealing spot. I know, kind of crazy saying the Jets look like a good spot for a head coach, but they do have the number two overall pick. They have Sam Darnold, so maybe that's signing for a coach. Their defense is actually very solid. A lot of great players on that side of the ball. They've got Mekhi Becton, but I don't know how much a left tackle swings your decision to coach a team. So to me, those are three very clear top jobs. I would say somewhere in the middle there would be the Falcons. Falcons are in a very strange spot, and you could go a lot of different ways depending on what kind of coach you get. You kind of think they'd be built to win now. Aging quarterback Matt Ryan, you got Julio Jones there. I mean, that's kind of it. You got Alex Mack still holding that on the center spot if he comes back in free agency. So, the Falcons, to me, they're an interesting team. They do have a high pick, and it's high enough that you could draft a quarterback if you want. If you want to go in that direction, you can try and build around Matt Ryan again in his old age. Or you can just tear it down, rebuild completely from square one. So to me, that's an interesting spot if I'm a head coach looking at it. That's one of those spots where it's not as good as the Chargers or the Jags or even the Jets. See, it's much worse than the Jets, but it's a middle spot. And around that same spot is where I put, like, the Lions. Similar situation where you've got a veteran quarterback who, in all honesty, you should probably trade. Please trade Matt Stafford somewhere where he can do something in, like, the playoffs. I would really like to see Matt Stafford playing in January. Or literally just any team that can be competitive. It's my wish as an NFL fan. But you do have talent there. TJ Hockenson. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I didn't mean to pause there, but I just had to stop and think, who do the Lions have? They got Swift and Kerryon Johnson in the backfield. Kenny Galladay's a free agent. Marvin Jones Jr.'s a free agent. So it's not a super appealing spot, but maybe you think you can do something there. They got Jeff Okuda on the defensive side of the ball. He was kind of injured most of the year, but when he's healthy, he could be something. And then to me, right around that spot is where the Eagles are. I would say they're a little bit above the Lions because they at least have some talent on that defensive side of the ball. They've got Jalen Hurts, which is a nice piece. And they have a high pick, so they can go a lot of ways. So I would say that's about where I think the Eagles are. Maybe you get a coach who really, really knows his quarterbacks. Maybe you score and get, like, Brian Daboll or Eric Bieniemy, and you think, wow, this is going to be the way I transform Carson Wentz back into being superstar Carson Wentz, and maybe that's the direction you go. So you got a lot of moves there. You may notice there was one team I didn't mention yet, And that's because I think they are at the absolute bottom of all of these. All these teams. Worse than the Lions. Worse than the Eagles. Worse than any team if I'm a head coach going in. And that is the Houston Texans. Where do I even begin with them? You would think, and I thought when I was going into this, well, you know, they got Deshaun Watson. No matter how bad the team is, no matter how few draft picks they have, they got Deshaun Watson. That's something. The problem is, Deshaun, he doesn't want to be there. He wants out. They messed up. The Texans have messed up so much. And the more I look at it, the less appealing it is all around. They just hired their GM, and the hiring of that was absolutely insane. If you look into it, the Texans were about to hire the vice president of football operations from the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was fine, all good on the table. But then some executive didn't want to do that because he thought he was going to lose too much power in the organization and talked the owner into hiring Patriots former GM, Nick Caserno? Castano? Costanzo? It starts with a C. Wow, I should really maybe get my facts straight. I'm just going to say different words with a C whenever I say his last name. But it's the former Patriots general manager, Nick Costanzo. And so he got hired. He wasn't on the list of like potential candidates before that. He got hired pretty much out of thin air because he and this executive have a very similar agent. And so he hires him. Watson, who had a little bit of say, and by I mean a little bit of say, I mean very little say, probably just has his ear against the door, not even in the meeting. And it's just like, what's happening? You throw on top of that the fact that Deshaun Watson just wanted them to interview Eric Bieniemy, the Chiefs offensive coordinator, and they don't even do that. They're the only team without a head coach, minus the Eagles, who fired their head coach today, right? So they haven't had a chance to interview anyone. But aside from them, the Texans have been the only team that haven't interviewed Eric Bieniemy. Only one. And that was the one guy your star quarterback wants you to at least look at. Like, come on, what are you doing? If Deshaun had said, hey, can you interview my cousin for the head coaching job? Then you're like, okay, hold up, wait. No, we're not doing that, you know? We're not doing that for our quarterback. That's a little crazy. But it's Eric Bieniemy. He's a good offensive coordinator. He's respected. You should talk to him. Maybe that's why they didn't talk to him, because he is a respected guy, you know? Feels like in Houston, they don't really want to be respected in this league. It's just an absolute mess down there. I don't know why any coach would want to go down there. You throw in J.J. Watt, too. Watt's probably gone at this point. You're about to lose your franchise icon. Right, the best player in your franchise's history. I think there's no doubting that he is. You just lost one of your best receivers ever, DeAndre Hopkins. I have to say one of the best ever instead of just the best ever, because, you know, Andre Johnson, gotta support that legend. But DeAndre Hopkins, an exceptional player, you send away for a bad contract and a second round pick. I know that's Bill O'Brien, and that's in the past. We all know how bad Bill O'Brien is. And he's really messed up this organization. At least that's what I thought. But at the moment, it looks like they're content to mess themselves up. They don't need Bill O'Brien there anymore. They can do it themselves. It's just sad to see a team that, for so long, it felt like the Texans, they were right on the verge. I felt like for years, the Texans, I was like, ooh, you get one more piece, you can do something, right? They got Deshaun Watson. that was a lucky break for them in the draft, right? To me, at least, it was lucky that he fell down to 10. Some people thought he was going to be like a second-round talent, which to me is insane, especially now. But you got a star quarterback. They got a little unlucky with the J.J. Watt injuries, right? Those all piled up all at once. And that happened right as you got your star quarterback. But this franchise, it's just not good. I don't see any. The only way I see them getting good again is, one, you have to hire a real competent coach. No more Bill O'Briens in there. You have to get a good, solid coach who can just change the culture around them. And then, two, the only salvation they have is that Deshaun Watson trade. If they can trade Deshaun Watson for just a haul of draft picks, that's the way that they can salvage themselves. And when I say a haul of draft picks, I'm talking like a Herschel Walker level deal for them. If you don't know Herschel Walker, you should look up his story. He got traded by Dallas, and that trade pretty much set up Dallas's dynasty for the 90s. Like, that's what they need. They need a ton of draft capital, and then they need to hit on all those draft picks. But I don't think they will, because my boy Nick, their general manager, Nick C, in his entire career as the Patriots general manager, he drafted a single Pro Bowler, and that Pro Bowler was like a punter or a kicker. That does not inspire confidence in me. If I was a Texans fan, I would be livid right now. It makes me feel good as a Chargers fan, because it makes me feel like my organization's actually unified, which for Chargers fans, that's a rare feeling. You know, Dean Spanos up there. Hate that man. Moved us out of San Diego. Completely different story there. So, regarding the rest of the head coaching candidates and jobs, I'm going to detail all my thoughts on who I think is going to go where, what I think of each candidate, or at least some of the big candidates. I feel like every year there's always one candidate that gets hired out of nowhere, like Joe Judge last year. I had no clue who that man was. And all of a sudden he gets hired. And he seems fine so far. But I'll detail all my thoughts on that in a later podcast. It's probably what I'm going to do before the Super Bowl. We'll see. So stay tuned for that one. And if you're still listening, thank you. I don't know how you got through all my ramblings and ended here. If you feel so inclined, feel free to subscribe. I think that's what you do on podcasts. This is going to sound shocking, but I don't really know what I'm doing. I know. That seems so out of the blue from what's been happening so far. But feel free to subscribe. And thank you. And I'll see you guys next time.